From Thunderbirds to Pterodactyls and the Book of the Month show with Jill Appleton, Jill Prowse, and Rob Nichols, this is Shane Rimmer congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this podcast.
Our July Book of the Month is a blend of crime, horror, and fantasy. The book is called A Matter of Blood, and the author is Sarah Pinborough. The story is set in the not-too-distant future. A terrible recession has brought havoc to society, unemployment is rife, crime is on the increase, and government is now in debt to a company called The Bank, which was set up by the country's wealthiest men. The main character of the story is D.I. Cass-Jones. A shocking event which happened in his past and almost ruined his career still haunts him. His marriage is now crumbling, and his drink and drug abuse is more frequent than it should be. To add to his problems, he has a serial killer on the loose who calls himself the Man of Flies, and he is trying to get to the bottom of a shooting of two schoolboys, which appears to be a gang-related incident which went wrong.
Kate sat on the sofa, rocking backwards and forwards, her pale skin blotchy with tears. Sergeant Blackmore stood at the fireplace beside a man Cass didn't recognise. They nodded awkwardly at Cass, and he returned the gesture. Kate didn't look up, but pulled the cushion she was hugging closer to her chest. He flinched at the thought that she'd probably gained more comfort from an inanimate object than she did from him. Maybe it was time he stopped fighting it. He let people down. It's what he did. It's true, then. Blackmore nodded. Sorry, sir. Don't be. You didn't shoot them. In the corner of his eye, he saw Kate flinch. She never could stand his roughness. But he didn't know any other way to deal with pain. The unknown man, thick-set, in his 50s, stepped forward. Detective Inspector Jones, I'm D.R. Ramsey, from Chelsea Nick. An American accent, and phrasing slightly odd. Not originally, I take it. No, I guess home is really Erie, Pennsylvania. But I left 20 years or more. Wouldn't recognise the place if I saw it now, and it certainly wouldn't recognise me. Were you on the scene? Ramsey nodded. Yeah, I'm Murder Squad, like you. Responding car called us out. You know how the drill goes. I got there about 2 this morning. How were they found? Cass's voice sounded like a stranger's in his head. Was he really talking about his little brother and his family? The world glimmered as his breath hitched and stuck in his lungs, as shock took a brief hold of him. For a moment it was as if a watery glow like early autumn sunshine coated Ramsey, shining out from the corners of his eyes. Cass blinked, and it was gone. Your nephew was shot in his bed, died instantly. He wouldn't have known anything about it. And Jessica? The shot must have woken her up. She was found in the doorway of the main bedroom. He shot her once in the chest at point-blank range. She would have died instantly too. Ramsey kept his voice level. It looks as if your brother then went downstairs. He shot himself in the lounge. Christian would never do something like that. Ramsey shrugged, and Blackmore looked down at his feet. Cass felt his frustration rising. I know it's the normal response from a relative to disbelieve. I know that. He swallowed hard and lowered his voice. I'm just saying that Christian really wasn't the type. According to your wife, he'd been trying to reach you for a few days, is that right? Yes, but I spoke to him briefly yesterday. He didn't sound suicidal. He was agitated, Kate's voice cut in, a monotone. She followed it with a loud, phlegm-riddled sniff. When he rang here last night, he didn't sound right. I thought you said he found it sounded fine, Cass stared at his wife, aware of the sharpness in his voice, but unable to stop it. Kate met his eyes, and for the first time, after everything they'd gone through in their marriage, he was sure he saw hate burning there. He winced.
Cass is devastated when his only brother Christian kills his wife and son and then commits suicide. But when he is accused of being involved in the killing, Cass feels sure he is being set up. A film which is sent to him and an anonymous phone call lead him to a mysterious Mr. Bright and a Mr. Solomon. As more clues come to light, it appears the shooting, the serial killer, and even his own brother's death are all linked in a way that is darker and more sinister than he could have imagined.
He looked again at the Solomon and Bright entry. Could Mr. Bright be one of the account holders? Once again, everything came down to this name. He hoped to hell that Claire had dug up some information to share when he got back. Each of the saved zipped files was labelled only with an incomprehensible series of numbers or letters, with no clue to content in the name. Most were corrupted, but the last one opened, and the coded title vanished to be replaced with one word. Potentials. There were 15 folders, and as Cass looked at the names on the first few, Adams, Begum, Boyle, two lots of Smith, he realised they were surnames. He opened one. A DOS-style screen opened and flashed the words, File deleted, potential voided, 1988. He clicked another. The message was the same, except this time the voided date was 1996. He went through the rest. The 14th declared the potential voided in 2003. At the 15th, the name on the file was Jones. The usual DOS screen appeared, but this time there was a series of options. Heritage, employment, medical, surveillance. His stomach churned as he clicked on the first. He looked through the list of names, not recognising most until he came to his own immediate family. Some names were in red. His parents, him, Christian, Jessica and Luke, but Kate was in green. If he hadn't felt so invaded, he might have laughed. Even in some bloody computer system, they were separated. He went into the medical folder next and frowned. He knew Luke had been seriously ill, but if the figures next to the various dates were medical bills, then the boy had been through a load of tests. But this couldn't be right. There were dates going back to his birth. Cass scrolled down, trying to make sense of the dates and his numbers. Under the initial batch was another heading, Secondary, with a single line. See Main Employee Directory as explanation. Cass began to nod to himself. Christian's medical cover was provided by the bank, one of the many perks. So whatever medical costs he'd incurred, like Jess's pregnancy care, would be in the bank's main files. Cass couldn't see what was so special about the medical costs listed here that someone had to hide them. Questions upon questions. The surveillance folder appeared to be a spreadsheet of accounts, a mixture of large payments interspersed with smaller ones. An annual billing system? So who were they watching? Christian? Him? Both of them? And more importantly, why? He looked up from the computer. This was their family home, and suddenly it no longer felt safe. A chill of paranoia crept into him, a familiar, quiet fear that he hadn't felt in a long time. After Birmingham, he'd lived with that watery sensation in the pit of his stomach for a year or more. Every time someone moved quickly around him, he thought he'd been found, and that the lie of the body in the river had been uncovered. If the nightmares didn't wake him, then the slightest breeze outside the window would. Eventually, time passed, and the world moved on, and he'd slowly learned to relax. But now it had flooded right back, feeling like oil in his guts. He slipped the data pen into the slot on the side and came back to the start menu. He dragged the file over to the box and was dismayed when the computer flashed up. Copy failed. He tried again. Copy failed. He swore quietly under his breath and clicked the help icon. File non-transferable. Well, that was just great. Without files, he had no proof. He rubbed his face, his fingers sinking into creases that felt as if they'd deepened over the course of the day. Proof of what, exactly? That the bank had accounts dating back hundreds of years? That Mr. Bright had a vested interest in the Jones family? That the whole company was some kind of front? For what? If he started spouting stuff like that, they'd lock him up. Whatever was going on here might have some bearing on the three cases, but for now, he'd keep this all to himself and see where the normal investigations led. He reopened the files. All of this must have been what Christian wanted to talk to him about.
Nothing in this book is as it seems. When you begin the book, you think you're reading a crime based on real-life situations, but as you progress through it, hints of the supernatural start to appear, and you realise you are reading something entirely different, which is much more complex and much darker underneath. This being a trilogy, you are left with unanswered questions, and I have already ordered book two from the library to find out what happens next. A gritty and gripping story, which I highly recommend.
Okay.
Being chosen as an author for the Southside Book of the Month with Jill Appleton is one of life's top honors. Now on to the Booker Prize for Literature.
Lincoln Inspired is more than just an arts festival, more than a literary festival, more than a whole set of lifestyle opportunities, and more than what the world has needed for millennia.
To see just how much more Lincoln Inspired can make you, Go to lincolninspired.co.uk and explore the inspiration.
Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate residential elderly and residential EMI service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 223334. That's 01642 223334. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondents from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
Book of the Month. More than a podcast, greater than a radio show, quite simply an audio treat for the enlightened with Jill Appleton and Jill Prowse. And every so often, some extremely lovely
from
writers.
Airwolf, Magnum PI, and St. Elsewhere, Native Voices and Days of Our Lives, this is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
Thank you very much. Well, a historic day. In many ways, the equivalent to kind of William Hartnell's last incarnation as the good Doctor Who. But we'll talk about that later, because obviously Jill Appleton is still with us and will hopefully be with us in various other things. But we'll explain what's happening as the programme proceeds, because we've got a top squad for this auspicious day. We have the welcome return of Jill Prowse. How are you, Jill?
I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. Of course, Rob Nichols, as ever, on good form. How are you, Rob?
Hello, I'm fine, thank you.
We had even thought Charles Arthur might have been putting in an appearance, but no. Anyway, that's about it. Also, keeping the studio audience in tremendous sort of joy, we have Kayleigh Carr. How are you, Kayleigh?
I'm great, thank you.
Excellent, good to see you've returned all three of the previous books, none of which you managed to quite read through, but that's okay, you know. You're a journalism student, why would we expect you to read, for goodness sakes? So, and we have the legend who is Jenny Finch, of course, ace author, and back with us, of course, as well, since celebrating, of course, being on the panel for the first ever live Book of the Month event.
It's a joy to be here.
Excellent. Okay, let's move back to Rob to start off with, then. We'll go with this. Sarah Pinborough, I've got to declare an interest here, Rob, to start off with, because Sarah's a colleague and a friend, and I was very nearly going to bring her in as a sort of guest sort of folk here, right. But she sort of said she'd hide away from that point of view. But she's doing fantastically well. She's in the top 50 of SFX's people who are likely to change and shake up the whole routine. Torchwood, obviously, has benefited from the Sarah Pinborough touch. She's doing lots of other things. So I enjoy this, but don't let me influence you. Carry on, Rob. What's your own view?
No, it's definitely a book that you get more and more into. It's always interesting when you've got like the main character is like a very much a flawed individual, and you get all his dark side and whatever laid out in front of you. So it's not. I like that, but I think, as Jill said, there's far more revealed as you go on, that then it's not just a straight sort of detective thing, is it? That there's the supernatural forces, and I think we're going to find out an awful lot more about that than in the second book, I guess. But it's incredible how many murders that are going on that he's dealing, that the main character Cass is dealing with at the same time and trying to juggle, and there just seems to be another one every single day, doesn't there, really?
It's like obviously the banking industry having all sorts of challenges there, but we'll work into that. You said it's obviously the first of the thing. Did you find it as unsatisfactory a cliffhanger as the Ask and the Answer trilogy that we covered recently, where we kind of went through that?
I did when I actually I was only about 10 pages from the end when I couldn't read. I've got bad eyesight now, and I just saw book one at that point. Thought, oh no, another two books. Yeah. It's annoying when you've got to go out and get that second book.
Interesting. I think the original plan was obviously to develop it and take it through from that point of view. But Jill Prowse, what did you make of the whole thing?
Oh, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It had me gripped from very near the beginning, really. And I didn't like Cass's character. That's not supposed to like him. But, you know, as Rob said, he's an interesting character. He's not boring at all. I thought it was so clever the way she sort of brought in things that you could really relate to, like the banking situation we have now. Names, you know, like Branson, and I thought that was clever as well. So there was lots of things, really, where it sent chills through you because you thought, well, this isn't that far away from something that could possibly happen in the future. Of course, not the supernatural side of it. But I really enjoyed that as well. It's clever the way she brings that in. So you've still got these gritty murders going on, which is like a very traditional type of crime book. But then you've got this other side to it, which makes it so much more interesting. And then the way it all tied together, I thought was very clever. Now, I did see straight away that it was the first book of more than one. So thought, oh, here we go. But I don't mind. I'm going to order it straight away and read it straight away because I want to get straight into the next sort of part of it.
She's had an interesting backstory insofar as she took to writing at a relatively late stage. I think she was sort of late 30s or thereabouts, and then had a teaching career before then. And there are lots of interviews. In fact, she was very close to being at a recent Middlesbrough Bookfest, I think 2 or 3 years ago is when we first sort of connected with Sarah. But, I mean, she does seem to be catching that kind of asset of really sort of quality speculative fiction. I mean, it took me to the first introduction when I was reading through it. I thought it's a standard horror kind of Frank Herbert-ish sort of stuff, but she does manage to bring in a lot of interesting twists and turns, and that's why I'm particularly fascinated by her recent stuff. It's obviously Matter of Blood was one of her early works, but some of the recent stuff where she actually plays around with fairy tales and Victorian London and Jack the Ripper and all sorts of areas.
I think it's clever when an author can get you into the book so much that you really care about certain characters. So there's one character who does die in the book. I was really, really upset when that person died because she was one of the few who you genuinely thought was a nice person. There's a lot of characters in the book that were interesting and I enjoyed reading about, but none of them you could say they were nice people. I just think she's very clever. I think her style's good, and I can't wait to read more.
So obviously a Pinborough fan then.
I am indeed.
So SFX magazine quite right to actually put her, I think possibly 52, 53, or maybe in the top 50 of those most influential SFX folks. I think it's J.J. Abrams who's number one. I don't know why, but still there we are. Let's move over to Jill Appleton. We'll move the sort of microphone back to yourself then, Jill. Given the historic nature of this show, which shall be hoping quite clear in a few seconds, What did you make about the whole thing? I mean, we said that Sarah was very nearly coming up to the Middlesbrough Book Festival a couple of years ago, but sadly didn't quite manage to connect from that point of view. And I think it was from there we did the interview in any case, and so we kind of built a good sort of working relationship with that on both radio services. What are your thoughts on the whole thing? Did you think it was a cracking read?
Yeah, I did. That's one thing, doing this programme, I've realised I quite like sort of fantasy fiction, which I never would have picked up before I started doing Book of the Month. But I enjoyed the Patrick Ness book very much, and I enjoyed this book. When I started it, I just thought it was your run-of-the-mill crime story, and I wasn't that enthusiastic. And then I started to realise there was something a bit more to it, and then I really got into it. I wasn't sure, though. Like Jill was saying, she liked the fact that she'd mentioned people like Branston, and there was Anton Deck mentioned in there. And I thought maybe in a few years' time that might date it a bit, so I wouldn't have included that in there myself.
I think you've raised a very interesting point. Let's turn to an ace writer in terms of contemporary nature, etc., because we have, as mentioned, the fantastic Jenny Finch in the studio. Now, Jenny, you write, it's not historical fiction, but you set it in the 1980s and the 1990s, etc., so do you have this notion of obviously trying to authenticate the sort of aspect by giving cultural reference that we have?
I think you have to, and although it's not historical fiction at the moment, in about 4 years it'll class as such for the Crime Writers Association. Mm. I can't wait. And I spend a lot of time looking up the price of a moped licence in 1984, and when did they get rid of the pound note, and when certain words appeared in the English language. Mm. because it's close enough for people still to remember. And there's always a helpful reader who's going to ring you up and go, actually, we didn't say that until, oh, thank you so much.
Fantastic. So there we are, Jill. It's working through that sort of reference from that point of view. Okay, we won't ask for the scores just yet, but let's move to Kaylee. From what you've heard, Kaylee, is this something which I know you're not a prolific reader, because obviously you're too busy doing your fashion journalism, quite rightly so. But in terms of that, would you be tempted to get hold of a Sarah Pinborough novel and sort of say, yeah, let's work through this?
I do, yeah. I think it really does sound quite interesting. Definitely be something I'd be willing to read, yeah.
Kaylee is suffering from a bit of a cold, so her voice sounds even more amusing.
Oh,
that's great, fantastic. She hasn't been inhaling helium. It's just a light. It's a different perspective. It's good stuff. Okay, Rob, let's turn to your good self. Scores marks out of 10, please, for Sarah Pinborough, A Matter of Blood, The Man of Flies is Among Us, Part 1, Book 1 of the Dog-Faced Gods trilogy.
8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. Okay, Jill?
I'm going to give it 9.5.
Yeah, okay. Well, as I said, I'm biased because I think Sarah's done some cracking stuff. And she warned me when the very first radio interview we actually did, she said just 2 seconds before I was due to go on air, by the way, I'm usually known as Potty Mouth Pinborough. Great, I said, fine, that's okay. But she worked through it perfectly well without having to sort of hover any other sort of way. So that was a well done, Sarah, from that perspective. Mind you, her Facebook updates are quite astonishing in many ways. So, Jill, your sort of scores?
8.5.
We have worked on that negativity to work through. Well, this is a historic moment. I'm going to actually go for 9.5, actually. Yeah, I'll go for 9.5 for that. Not quite perfect, but pretty good. So great stuff there. Because we've decided as part of the team to provide you with a white envelope, Jill, which is there, which has actually got a little token of our appreciation, because this is actually Jill Appleton's final show of Book of the Month, as indeed the actual host. Plus, keeping your fantasy themes going, we're also passing over something which will actually help you book all those various other bits and pieces in from a top-rated TV series that is, if you haven't seen it, I'm sure you'll sort of find it. Quite fascinating in every sense of the word, the Once Upon a Time calendar, and indeed a little token to actually sort of put to your own good wishes for all the fabulous work, because in many ways, well, Jill, you were the co-founder of Book of the Month, the programme that's led to various book festivals and various other factors and so on. What I hear the dear listener already saying is going to happen now. Well, I said at the start, it's a bit like the kind of William Hartnell, Patrick Troughton-esque scenario, because without any further ado, I have to actually press this button here.
It's the Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting with Jenny Finch and a team of top writing talent.
And you see, already the first in the revamped jingles have actually gradually sort of worked through. It's like the regeneration scene, you know, really large on that sort of setup. Just one of several jingles and idents will work through. Don't worry, Jill, we're not editing you out, but clearly, you know, we had to sort of work that thing through there. So, Jill, anything you'd like to share with us as to in terms of your thoughts over the last 4 or 5 years you've actually been anchoring the Book of the Month programme?
Well, I'm going to miss it. It's been lovely, and I've read lots of books I probably wouldn't have read before, and I think it's helped with my confidence, as Alex is always springing things on me unexpectedly. But it's been a great experience, and I'm really sad that this is my last one, but I might pop back if I'm allowed.
Well, of course, Jenny is in the chair now, so I mean, that's critical stuff from that sort of perspective. So, yeah. So there we are.
Well, thank you so much for my card and my vouchers. Totally unexpected.
Yeah,
that's
well,
thank
there
you.
We are. You can work through it. And we just turn to Jenny Finch now. Jenny, as I say, we were delighted you were able to take on board the mantle of being the chair, personal chair of the Book of the Month scenario, etc. Ever since, you know, we said, you know, the Drowners, and I look at the acknowledgements there, I still sort of find this wonderful where she actually says, many thanks to the media people who've given me the chance to discuss and present my work, especially Phil and Amy from Radio Tees and all at Southside Broadcasting and Siren FM, which is just wonderful. It's great stuff. Not, of course, the influenced our decision in terms of offering you the post, basically. But your thoughts, and obviously welcome to the team.
Well, thank you. I am so honoured to be asked. I have very big shoes to fill, but I will do the best I can to follow on from a great act. Thank you very much.
Well, if you can stutter and stammer, you'll be fine, because I think that's what I do every month.
I must have missed that bit on the podcast, Jill.
I think it's a round of applause for Jill Appleton and Jenny Finch. Outgoing, incoming, fantastic. So there we are. That's the Book of the Month, sort of special edition, etc., with The Man of Flies, the Matter of Blood, Sarah Pinborough wrapping that up. Where do we go from here? I don't think we've even decided as yet, but we will have that. Book of the Month will be back in September. Unless, Jill, have you got one in mind?
I did bring a book.
You did.
Yes, called The Magic Toy Shop.
What do you think, Jenny? Shall we go?
It's not very thick.
Sounds great.
There we are, The Magic Toy Shop. Yes, fantastic. So that will be working through from that point of view. Rob is already emotionally overwhelmed here, so he's only to be wrung out from that point of view, because you didn't realise when Jill came along with her husband and myself to the fabulous 50th birthday celebration that 1 year later we'd be actually saying, Jill, it's your last book of the month. You know, it's frightening, you know, it's that kind of thing. But anyway, Jill Appleton will obviously return, as indeed will the rest of the team from that point of view. So from the Southside Broadcasting Book of the Month team, can we all say bye-bye?
Bye.
It's the Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting with Jenny Finch and a team of top writing talent.